Hello there, this is Dave Allen for Maximum Questions Podcast. As ever, there are a lot of updates to applications for Mac and also for iOS. Perhaps there are even more this week due to upgrades for the iOS and also for the Mac. My upgrade to the latest operating system on the Mac went a little bit strange due to it booting into an old boot disk. It took me a little while to work out why everything was completely wrong. This is the second episode of the second series of Mac 20 Questions, and once again we have a blast from the past with a chat from a guest from Series 1. In this episode I'm going to be talking to Mike Reed, and we cover quite a bit to do with making movies and creating video. In our first chat 5 years ago, Mike was involved in making movies, and his interest still lies in this direction. And you'll be able to find out all about this if you listen to the rest of this podcast with my chat with Mike Reed, who lives in England. Good morning, Mike. How are you doing?
Not bad. It's been a while, hasn't it?
It's been 5 years.
Five? Oh, geez.
I know. Time flies when you're enjoying yourself, doesn't it?
It certainly does. I apologise. You may hear the washing machine in the background. I thought it would have finished its cycle by now, but it hasn't. But maybe
it'll give the podcast an extra bit of flavour.
Well, yeah. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, I was just having a look at the thing we was doing last there, and the last time we talked was, it was before the 8th of the 8th, 2009.
Yeah, I've been kind of dipping in and out of the whole filmmaking thing as well, because I think back then I was probably talking about a feature film I'd made called The Fix. I seem to remember talking about that, we shot it that year. Whether it had been made by then, I'm not sure. I'm kind of going fully freelance just this last couple of months. So it's been an interesting journey for me. And, I'm using obviously the Mac stuff as the backbone of my business and stuff. So
with the filmmaking, is it still the same as before? You're doing more towards sound type of things, or are you doing sort of the filming end of things as well?
Yeah, a bit of a jack of all trades, I suppose. I'm setting up kind of, a micro movie studio called Deer Studios, which is deer as in the animal, because I tend to end up shooting a lot of things in the woods because you don't need a permit, and you know it's you don't get bothered by anyone but dog walkers, really.
Yeah, and like you were saying there, you're doing like documentaries. So is that the main thing that you're interested in doing, sort of like making stories and actual movie type films?
Yeah, a bit of everything. Again, I haven't really specialised, which is possibly a fault, actually. So the Deer Studios is more geared towards, I guess, fiction. And then I do have a business, it's more a business idea, I suppose, about doing sort of time capsule documentary. So kind of selling straight to sort of people, you know, the idea that, you know, maybe... a professionally produced time capsule. I mean, because obviously anyone can take home video, but I guess not everyone has the time. And so, I've got a few things I'm doing market research on, just to see if that's viable, because obviously, you know, it would be a business, not a hobby. So
when you say time capsule, what exactly do you mean by that?
I'm thinking of two kind of areas. One is... which is probably the most potential, is going into nurseries and filming the children there on behalf of the parents and maybe the grandparents, and really documenting their progress through, say, a year or a term in nursery. And I think at that age, obviously, you see real development in the children. So that's one area. And then going kind of the opposite end of the scale, if you like, kind of like video biographies, where I would sit down and talk to, you know, maybe more senior people who want to kind of get their life story down and, you know, do something with a sort of, more of a life story, a beginning, middle, end. If it's a fairly senior, old age pensioner, you know, the sort of a keepsake for their children and grandchildren.
You didn't want to say end there, did you?
Yeah, and that's why it's kind of a bit of a tricky area to kind of get into. But, you know, I think from what I gather, there would be some interest. It's just how it's it's the perception of how it's marketed, and you know.
Yeah, I can see that the difficulty with the children one is that if there are other children there, you'd have to take permission off the parents of the other children that are in the nursery as well.
Yeah,
that could be a bit of a problem, I think.
Yeah, there is that whole thing where, you know, some children don't want to be on camera, or their parents don't want them on camera. The nurseries I'm talking to have a system, because, I mean, the nurseries take, already for Ofsted, they take kind of photographic evidence of development and such, and they put them into folders. So some already have permission, and I think it would just be a case of saying, well, okay, those who are not allowed to appear on camera, go to that side of the room kind of thing. And, you know, I'll just deal with the kids that are, you know, allowed to appear. Because I think as well, in that environment, it's not just about the single child. I think it'd be, like I was saying earlier, you know, if you get other bits happening, as you know, so other kids might come in and out of frame, you know, that's faces and kids that child will remember when they're older, and there will be the kind of the video memory of that moment and stuff.
Mm. It's quite a good idea. I mean, I know if I was to look back on any of those films of when I was a kid, not that there would be, because they hadn't invented a lot of that stuff then. But I wouldn't remember any of their faces. I wouldn't know any of these people.
Yeah, so really it's an area I've identified that has potential, you know, beyond, you know, the usual sort of fictional drama stuff, that, you know, that there's a kind of what I'm calling a frugal wave movie sort of movement in Portsmouth, which has been going since about 2008, 2009. So since the last time we spoke, I guess, you know, with when the whole financial meltdown really led to people realising that maybe there's not so much money flowing around. Certainly, although the UK seems to have put a brave face on it, from where I'm sitting, things are not that great still. And I saw on the BBC as well that, you know, Cameron is saying there could be chinks, and, you know, maybe it's not as great as everyone's making out. So interesting times.
Well, I hope they don't start talking it all down again, because I think a lot of the problem was with before is that everyone was sort of talking it down all the time, and every time you turn the news on, it was always bad, it's bad, it's getting worse.
Well,
and of course, that was like self-fulfilling prophecy, wasn't it?
Well, but, you know, I'm very optimistic at the moment, and, you know, like I say, it's a case of remaining optimistic and, you know, not having your head in the sand, but remaining optimistic and yeah, on and doing stuff. So, you know, Part of my decision to go freelance kind of is related to that as well. And the fact that I had my day job was in IT, but it's more for the company I was working for. It was more convenient to run that out of India. So that's, you know, that's part of globalization. That's not a complaint. That's just how it is. But it's given me an opportunity to kind of rethink what I want out of life. So as far as that goes, I'm quite pleased about that.
Oh, don't talk to me about these people from India. I keep getting them calls from those people saying they want me to do something on my Windows computer. Keep on. I say, please take me off your database. And last time I did, as soon as he said anything, I says, please take me off your database. And he immediately says to me, go forth and multiply, except a little bit more rude than that.
Right.
And I thought, well, that's very nice, isn't it? You rang me up. I mean,
I think some of that is scammers, though.
I'm sure all of it is scammers, because, yeah, I mean, I don't have a Windows computer.
All right, well, yeah.
And I keep telling them, I don't have a Windows computer, don't talk to me, take me off your database, and they still keep ringing me back. So, I mean, sometimes I play with them and I say, okay, well, what do I do next? And I keep them on the phone as long as possible, and I annoy them and get them to repeat. I get so many points if I get them to repeat themselves. I get a certain number of points if I get them to swear at me. I get extra points if they hang up on me. I get more points. I get 10 points if I get put onto their supervisor.
Brilliant. Yeah.
It depends how much time we've got, really. Let's get back to that thing about you were saying about doing the talking to the old folks. I think it's quite a good idea. There was a friend of mine around here. He was doing because he's a writer, and he was interviewing people, and he was talking to them in terms of making a book out of their life. And I think, to a certain extent, making a video and getting them chatting about their stuff in the past is actually sort of probably a better idea in some ways.
Yeah, I think it depends who the audience is. I mean, I think, you know, people do want to read books, but I'm not sure in terms of like family members, unless it's kind of like a more of a picture book, if you like, with bits of text. But, you know, I wouldn't particularly want to read a novel about my grandparents, as it were, but a kind of video of them talking about their own life, I think, to me personally, would appeal more. But they're long gone. So, again, it was a kind of reflection on my own kind of situation, thinking, well, I would have loved to have that record of my grandparents, but it's not possible now. They're gone. I can work on my parents, I suppose. And it really is just, I guess, the idea is still in development. I'm still thinking of a format, because there is things like, how long should it be? Because you still got the issues of, attention span and, all the rest of it. So, do I do a summary at the header, as it were, then get into sort of the detail where, if you've got an hour to watch the whole thing, you could watch the whole thing or whatever, So it's still early days, but it's interesting that most people, well, actually everyone I've mentioned the idea to, they've all said they think it's got legs, as they would say.
Oh, there goes the washing machine.
Oh, you hear that, can you? Sorry. Yeah. It really it rocks around on the floor, something chronic.
I suppose if you had something like chapters or something where you say, okay, I want to jump to this particular chapter, or, you're right about sort of attention thing. And I suppose the way it's filmed is important as well, because you're going to have to make it so that it's interesting, use a couple of different camera angles, or maybe even, sit in the park and, sort of, that'd be quite interesting, couldn't it, that way?
That's exactly what I would be thinking. I mean, I would definitely try and avoid a very formal looking interview, because visually, I personally don't find them that interesting. I know they do cutaways and stuff, but you're right. I mean, a chat in the park with cutaways then of old photo albums, whatever it might be, I think in my mind would work a lot better and be a lot more interesting.
Mm. Okay, so we're on to sort of Mac 20 questions. So let's have a quick sort of jump into the Mac sort of things. And what's changed since the last time we talked in 5 years ago? And what sort of Mac stuff are you working with now?
Well, I've still got that same early 2009 24-inch iMac, which is what I'm actually talking to you on now. Although within the last couple of weeks, I have upgraded the RAM in that to the maximum 8 gig and put in a Samsung solid-state drive, a 256 gig solid-state drive, which they're about £90 in the UK now, so more affordable than they used to be. So that's still around. It's on Yosemite. I haven't personally had any problems with Yosemite updates and such. I know a lot of people are moaning about it dropping off Wi-Fi and stuff, but.
Well, there's been a new update this morning, actually, or last night, and I'll tell you what was weird. I got up this morning, and my Mac wouldn't start up for some reason. It was just blank screen. So I had to do a hard reset, pushing the button in to close it down, and then start it back up again. I don't like doing that, but I had to, so there was no choice. And then when it came back up again, and it's in 10.9.4. It found some sort of bootable disk on there somewhere or other, and it sort of booted up in completely wrong disk, because I've got an SSD as well, except I've got it connected by Thunderbolt, and it's, I don't know which make it is, but it's from Crucial. And so I run it off Thunderbolt as my startup disk, and it's a good way of updating it, because it saves me having to break into the iMac to change disks, because it'd be rather difficult to do that.
Yeah, I actually got my brother to help me do the upgrade, because you do have to take the glass off and go into sort of the guts a bit more. So it sounds like you're running it off an external drive then.
It is external, yeah, but it works great over Thunderbolt. Yeah. It's much faster than using a spinning hard drive in there.
Yeah, they're definitely. I mean, because the iMac I've got is relatively old. Well, yeah, 5 years old now. It's actually limited by the bus speed rather than the speed of the SSD. So it's kind of as fast as it could possibly be. And it's definitely a noticeable improvement over the old hard drive that was in.
Yeah. And are you doing editing of your video on that older computer, are you?
I did. The fix, which is what I edited, the last film I edited on it, was only 720p, because it hasn't quite got the grunt to do 1080p. I mean, it can do it, but you have to wait around a lot. Although that was with the hard drive in it, with solid state, maybe it could handle it now. But I have since bought, I had a built to order 17-inch MacBook Pro for a while, but I got rid of that, I don't know, couple of years ago because I put an SSD in that and it became unreliable. And I think that was around the Mavericks time where it was kind of still a quite early days for SSD, quite early days for Mac OS X supporting SSD. Or well, they still don't officially support a third-party SSD, do they? But and so it got just got really unreliable. So okay, I'll ditch that and kind of get another sort of system with a bit of grunt. But I looked around and actually the MacBook Airs have become very capable. So I got a built to order, you know, i7, 8 gigs RAM, half terabyte SSD. You know, just thinking thinking this is probably the last computer, typical, you know, laptop or desktop that I ever buy. I've said that every time I've bought one, but I just think, you know, because the way things like iPads and iOS are going, I actually use my iPhone more than any other computer, really. I'm even starting to use like iMovie on the iPhone just for sort of quick YouTube videos and such.
I haven't tried iMovie on the iPhone, actually. I always find it a bit small. I've got the iPhone 6.
Yeah.
Not the 6 Plus, but the 6. And I tend to prefer to, I mean, because I've got an iPad, so I'd rather, if I can do it on the iPad, I'll do it on the iPad, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I wouldn't want to do anything too complex on it. But for just doing a very sort of simple assemble edit, you know, it's great because I've got a YouTube channel. It's me practicing stuff still at the moment. But, you know, I'll shoot stuff on the iPhone. I've got the 6 Plus. And then just do a very simple assemble in iMovie and upload it, and it's done. And you know, there's kind of no sort of fannying about with it, really, I guess. But anything more complex, I'll bring that onto the computer, onto the MacBook Air, and cut it there.
So, you're using Final Cut Pro on there?
Yeah, I've been using Final Cut Pro 10. Seems like forever now. I'm not sure how long it's been around, but. That's been getting better with each release. I've never really had a problem with it, but I'm not like a hardcore editor. I'm not a casual editor either, I don't think. I mean, I know how to edit, the concepts more than the tools. But it's funny, actually, I was talking to someone the other day, and she was a Final Cut editor as well. But we both kind of agreed that of the sort of hardcore editors, you know, the people who really earn a living editing, they all seem to use Avid because I think they get the, it's all, because whenever I've attempted to use Avid, I've not got the brain, the muscle memory for all the keys and all the rest of it. But I guess if you're using it day in, day out, you know, once you know all those keyboard shortcuts, you can edit so quickly, you know, and I've seen Avid editors work and it is, well, you know, they're quick.
Yeah, I mean, I rather like Final Cut Pro. I think it's brilliant, and it has got better every time, hasn't it?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, yeah, it works with the way I think as well. I mean, the magnetic timeline I really like. It didn't take me very long to get used to that at all. And I like the fact you can drag stuff around and, you know, the magnetic connection stays where it is and stuff. You know, that's really...
I'll tell you what I tried on it fairly recently. I did a multi-camera shoot.
All right.
Had three cameras going, and I was able to get them all synchronized up, doing the thing with multi-camera within Final Cut Pro. And it wasn't bad. The only thing I found is that it was a little bit difficult. It was a bit slow sometimes with changing, doing the actual work when I was working with multi-cameras, but it did it.
Yeah, I've used multi-cam probably... twice at most, and I used it on a music video a few years ago, and it, you know, it was fine, you know, it was a quicker way of editing, but yeah, it's not something I've got much experience of, and although it was multicam, I think I was editing it was two shots from the same camera. So it wasn't true multicam either, you know, it was still all been shot with the same camera.
Okay.
But yeah, it sounds like it's definitely got potential there for...
But I imagine that with your you know, video in business there, you must have like a good video cam, and you've got your iPhones you could use as well, maybe. I mean, maybe you've got one, some an iPad as well. You could still even use that as a, as one of your cameras, and you could easily set up to shoot your old folks there from a couple of different angles, and then put it together to make it more interesting visually that way, couldn't you?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, more and more, I'm using like iPhones as primary cameras. I mean, okay, they lack zoom, or they got a digital zoom, I suppose, but they lack optical zoom. But I think in terms of, you know, portability, they can't be beaten. And I mean, even in terms of sound recording, that they're not bad. You know, I mean, you can always do better with, you know, proper microphone kit. But I'm often surprised at how good iPhones record sound. Again, going back a year or two, me and a friend, we made a feature film, you know, just over an hour long, just on the iPhone. I think it must have been the iPhone 4S at the time. And again, you know, we're shooting this horror movie with a couple of people, and we shot it in sort of city locations, and then out in the forest and stuff, and out in the woods. And, you know, it really does have a kind of clarity to it that maybe, you know, some other sort of even quite high-end video cameras don't have. Certainly DSLRs don't sound, to my ear, DSLRs, you know, the native microphone on a DSLR sounds nowhere near as good as an iPhone. But then I guess part of that is because iPhones, they have to deal with audio. I mean, they're still a voice communication device, so they are dealing with dialogue quite a lot. And that reminds me as well that I don't know if you're familiar with THX, which is like a Lucasfilm thing, but Tomlinson Holman, who was behind that whole thing at Lucasfilm, he's actually a consultant to Apple. So, I mean, I have no evidence of this, but it kind of, in my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, maybe he's got a lot to say about, you know, how Apple integrates audio and such, and so, and that may be why it sounds so good, you know, both recording and on playback, you know, bearing in mind the constraints of what the device is, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I mean, I was doing a little bit of video shooting yesterday with my iPhone. I think it's brilliant the way the video quality out of it. But I mean, it does have to be in sort of good lighting situations, though, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not so good in the dark. It gets very noisy quite quickly. I have used the 24 frames a second. There goes the washing machine again. The 24 frames a second is good fun. I mean, I suppose, a bit like the original 120 FPS, it kind of, the novelty does wear off a little bit quite quickly, but it's good that it's kind of there should something, you know, should the opportunity arise that you want to take something in quite good slow motion, you know, and it's 720p, so it's still pretty good HD as well.
Yeah, it's a bit of fun, isn't it? I went over to Ireland recently and I took my Sony NEX6 with me, and it's quite a good little camera for doing video as well. And I had my iPhone with me, the iPhone 6 and the iPad Air 2. And I didn't actually use the Sony camera at all the whole 4 days I was away. But I did a lot of video. You know, I actually was shooting video in a Cheesemongers, and it was quite a good place to do video. And I did some time-lapse video as well. It was great fun. And it's amazing all these things you can do with it.
Yeah, no, it is amazing. And I don't know if you watched the last Tim Cook, I don't know if it was a keynote, whatever it was it last month? He said, you know, they're keen to start replacing video recorders, you know, video cameras, camcorders, and I kind of think they already have, you know, just smartphones in general. But it's interesting that he kind of said that blatantly at one of those kind of keynote things.
So long as people remember to shoot it landscape and not portrait, that's what they
Yeah, I mean, I often wonder, because to me, it kind of is a bit, in terms of holding the thing, it's kind of more natural to hold it vertically. So I understand why people do it. And you can get a camera app called Horizon, which it uses the gyroscope to keep it horizontal no matter which way you hold the iPhone. It's quite wacky the way it works. But I've often wondered why, you know, why that restriction, you know, why it can't shoot horizontally. And I know it's all about the sensor, how it's arranged and such, but but I've always found it quite natural to hold it vertically.
The only thing that I find with my camera is that with my iPhone, when I want to shoot with it, is it's kind of small, and so you have to hold it pretty steady.
Yeah.
To get it sort of a good sort of shot, either you have to put it on something, or you have to have it on a tripod or something else. Otherwise, it gets a bit too sort of bouncy. And I don't like this sort of shaky vision that you get in some movies. You know.
I agree. It
gives me a headache.
And the 6 Plus, which I've got, has got optical image stabilization, but to be honest, I'd be hard pressed to say it's any better than the stabilization on the 5S I had, which excuse me, which is digital stabilization, isn't it? I agree. So you know, a tripod's always going to be the best way for a kind of a steady shot. And I've started using, because I don't like carrying loads of clobber around, I use something called a shoulder pod and a Manfrotto Pixie, which is only a tiny little tripod. But also I sort of playing around with putting the iPhone on, rather than a tripod, like a really kind of skinny lighting stand and stuff like that, just to carry less stuff around. So that's...
Well, even a monopod would make a bit of difference, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Mm. So do you still use your Sound Devices 702T?
Well, unfortunately, certain circumstances saw me sell that to basically pay off some debts and such. I do now have... I've still got a solid-state recorder. I've got a Naga SD, which is pretty good. Preamps are probably not quite as good as you'd find on the Sound Devices, but I used that last week on a short film, and yeah, it still sounds great compared to, you know, anything lesser, if you like.
Well, I've still got my Zoom H2, but I don't tend to use it an awful lot because I get such good sound out of other things. Although I've got a lavalier mic. It's made by Giant Squid. It's the mono version, and it was about $40, $45, something like that. And plug that into my iPhone, and it's great.
Cool. Yeah, I have actually got into microphones on the iPhone as well. There was a music video I was assisting with about a month ago now, and they wanted to record some dialogue just as kind of an intro. So I used that as an opportunity, because it's only like a couple of sentences. I used that as an opportunity to record the dialogue with my iPhone, but attached an Apogee mic, 96K, and just recorded it through. Yeah, so it's all digital lightning through to the iPhone. It ends up as a 44.1K 16-bit file, but it starts off kind of 24-bit 96K. So as long as your encoding is okay, sort of down that pipe, it's, you know, it sounds great.
So that's a lightning mic, is it? Because the mics that I've got fit in through the standard sort of... the 3.5 jack that you have on for the sound.
Yeah, so I'm keen to kind of be all digital, and so they're fairly recent. Last couple of months they've become available, I think, or maybe since the middle of the year. Prior to that they were analog, like the Apogee mic. I'm actually using that now to speak to you now, but via USB into the iMac. So it's got a interchangeable cable where you can plug it into an iPhone or a 30 pin iPhone as well, and that's all digital. What I've found with using the kind of the headphone jack is to my ear, it's just a little bit too noisy for me, and but I am very, very fussy.
Yeah, well, I mean, on mine, I find it great. I mean, it's better than whatever else. And what I do is I put it into Amadeus Pro. And you've got the audio unit's filters that you can put onto it.
Right.
And I've got a recipe that I got from someone who knows about these microphones and so on, and he recommended using, well, first of all, doing a bit of a normalised on the file, then sort of setting up with a peak limiter and a little bit of EQ, using a specific setting on it. It works great.
Yeah. Yeah, I use Amadeus Pro a lot as well, actually. I mean... I suppose I don't use it as much as I used to, In fact, last time I used it, I think it was to convert some MP3s into ringtones for my phone. But yeah, it's definitely my favourite wave editor, and I've had that around for a long, long time. That's a good bit of software.
Yeah, well, I do the podcast in that. I can actually sort of do it so I can put in the intros and outros, and if I want to put jingles and stuff like that, it's really easy to set the volumes and manually with having it sort of ducking down for what I wanted to do. And I think it's a brilliant bit of software.
Yeah, no, I use it a lot. Like I say, whenever I need to edit a wave and, like I say, filter a wave, I'll often do it in that, you know, rather than you can do some of those things in Final Cut Pro, but I prefer, if I'm working on sound, I prefer to kind of get it done outside of Final Cut and then import it.
Yeah, I found that as well, that it's just easier to work the controls for adjusting the audio in Amadeus.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So what sort of apps are you really like using on the iOS then on your iPad, on your iPhone 6 Plus?
Well, all sorts, really. I mean, I have made a note here that the one that's really, it might be a little bit too much to say it's changed my life, but I use something called Fantastical, which is like an alternative calendaring app, but it sits on iCloud. It'll still read all your iCloud calendars and stuff like that. And I just think it's just, compared to the sort of stock calendar application, and it's available on iOS and on the Mac, I just think it's brilliant. And you can sort of see at a glance how busy you are on any one day, because there's like each appointment has a dot and stuff like that, and it's color coded and blah blah blah. And you can use natural language to create an event, which I find really useful. It's just not quite as fiddly as using the stock app. And you know, I'm the sort of person, I like to be a little bit organized, and so I would use this. You know, I used to use the stock calendar apps quite a lot, but having just sort of discovered Fantastical, or Fantastical, I don't know how you pronounce it. Like I say, it's one of those apps that's so easy to use. You just wonder what were you doing before, you know, and why can't Apple do something this good? You know, it's anyway. So that's one app I really like, but it's like a really sort of basic thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I have it on my Mac and I quite like it. The fact that, as you say, do natural language. So when you combine that with actually using the speech-to-text, you can, you know, say to whatever it is you want to sort of, you know, like, I want an appointment for Tuesday at 10 o'clock to meet so-and-so. It'll put it all in there in the right places, and it works really well, doesn't it?
Yeah, and the latest update on the iPhone, they've given it a notification center widget. So, you can order it so it's like the first widget, and then you can swipe down and you've got a month view. And to me, that again, that helps me tidy up my home screen on the phone, because I can just get to it without the icon. You know, you can create an appointment from that notification center as well. And it sounds really sort of insignificant, but it's, for me, who, you know, like I say, I kind of, to maintain my organization, you know, a couple of kids and that who have dental appointments and all that kind of thing going on, it's really, I don't know, I just find it life-changing, the fact I can just swipe down and, you know, just press a thing and create a natural language appointment straight away. It's like, yeah.
You haven't been tempted by any of these other get things done things? I like Clear, and there's iPad versions and Mac versions for that as well.
I did go through a phase of using that for shopping lists and such, but eventually I found I still gravitate just towards the native notes application. Just seems to be good enough for me. And I tend to use email as a to-do list as well. I sort of, if an email needs something doing, I'll just leave it in my inbox before I sort of archive it off or whatever. And I notice actually there are other email clients which have a sort of use that sort of concept. I mean, things like, what was it, Mailbox and Boxer, and even Google's Inbox app kind of start to treat your inbox as a to-do list, which certainly with the way I use email, that fits. But I've been using it that way so long, you know, I've tried a lot of these other third-party email applications, and I don't find they're actually that much better than just using the stock email app.
Yeah, I've been trying out a few different ones as well. I was using one called Postbox on my Mac, which is quite good, but not quite as pretty as the standard one. And I could perhaps even go back to it again. There was another one I was using as well, I think Thunderbird. I was using one of these or one of the other of these because it had got the plugin which worked with GPG, so I could have encrypted mails if I wanted to. And then the GPG updated their plugin so that it would work with Mavericks. And of course, now it's broken again now that Yosemite is out. So that I'm having to do the encryption in a different way now if I want to send encrypted emails.
Yeah, I mean, again, in terms of email, I tend to process most of that on the phone. Unless I've got a really long email to type, I might sort of go to the effort of opening my laptop or sitting down at the iMac. But I do also have a Bluetooth keyboard for the phone, and you know, if I want to bang out a long email, I'll connect it to the keyboard often. On the Mac, the times I use email on the Mac, I'll 9 times out of 10 just use the web browser. You know, the iCloud mail interface I find adequate most of the time. Yeah.
You're not tempted to use the old speech to text Siri dictation to get your emails out there when you're on the iPhone?
I go through phases of using it, but last time I used it, I don't know, probably a few months ago, it was still inaccurate enough that it's quicker just to type.
Yeah. Well, I usually find it's actually fairly accurate. You do have to give it a good read through afterwards. And I usually find that maybe there's perhaps one or two words that I have to change. And if it's just one word, I mean, it's a double tap on the word. So let's select the whole word and then just put the right word in. So I find it, I find it quicker.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one thing I do use Siri a hell of a lot for is to set reminders. And it's interesting that, you know, like for example, I've got a reminder for myself this afternoon to move a router. And it hasn't understood the word router. I think it thinks I mean Reuters or Reuters news agency, because obviously the American pronunciation for router is router. Maybe if I said router, it would have understood me, which is weird because it's in you know, English UK language system, all the rest of it. So that always amuses me that. And maybe it just doesn't understand my Hampshire accent. I don't know.
But. Yeah, well, I find that sort of thing goes on as well. For some reason, I'm using Dragon Dictator, which is like the best speech text out there. And it was good. It was about $100 to buy it. It was. I got it. There was a discount on it, about half price. And for the most part, it understands me really, really good. And I like it because I can tell it to go back and correct a word that needs corrected and so on. But for the life of me, I just cannot get it to understand Yosemite.
Yeah. It just never ceases to amuse me. Some of the interesting things, things that speech recognition can come back with, especially some of the more inaccurate ones. I think you're right. I mean, I think Siri has definitely got more accurate. It's still a bit annoying that it needs a network connection to work still. Because I think Dragon can work offline, can't it?
Oh, yeah. I think it is possible using the Siri on the Mac, the dictation that comes with the Yosemite, you can tell it to do the enhanced speech-to-text, and it does download a file to enhance it.
Yeah, I've only ever used the dictation on the phone. I haven't even considered using it on Yosemite.
I tried it on Yosemite this morning just because I wanted to give it a bit of a try. And it was actually quite accurate, but it wasn't as accurate as using Dragon Dictate.
Yeah. Like I say, personally, and I haven't used Dragon, but maybe I'll look into that. I do find I'm not a touch typist, but generally speaking, I can sort of type more accurately than the speech recognition can. You know, like you say, you've got to go back and then edit what you've written, whereas if I type as I go, I generally don't make so many mistakes.
I do an awful lot of writing, and if I was to type something, I'd still have to go and read it back afterwards to make sure that it's read properly. I'd have to sort of I'll read it out aloud and make changes as I go. I'd have to do exactly the same with Dragon Dictate, except, you know, with Dragon Dictate, to get in there about 3 times faster.
Yeah,
and then the amount of editing I have to do afterwards is similar. So no, I think it's generally 3 times faster than using the typing on the keyboard.
Yeah, and like I say, I mean, I'm generally, you know, texting, emailing, that kind of thing. I'm not writing, you know, blog posts and such, or writing professionally, not at all.
With Drag and Dictate, it's quite handy because there's one or two applications you can use to do certain things. It works well with mail, for instance. But with messages, I quite often dictate into the message. And at the end of it, I say, send message, and off it goes. And it's brilliant. I don't have to even use the keyboard to actually send it.
Yeah, no, that is good. That is good. I mean, I must admit, another thing I struggle with is speaking aloud to a computer. I just find it a little bit surreal, but I guess that's something you get used to.
Well, I must admit I prefer to do it when I'm on my own in the house.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, I do it when I'm out and about anyway, but it just depends upon the environment and who I'm with, you know.
Yeah, but like I say, the using Siri to set reminders, that again, maybe it shows where my sort of priorities lay in terms of trying to get my life organized. But
Well, I find that, I tell you what's a good trick with the old speech texting and talking to Siri, is that in the morning, when my eyes are still not quite open and I don't want a bright light in front of them, I love when I can say to Siri, what time is it? And she says, what time is it? And she even says good morning to me.
Oh, wow. So is that with the, because you can do the whole, hey, is it hey Siri or something?
Yeah.
Because I tend to turn all that kind of stuff off because I don't want it to suddenly talk to me and stuff, you know. So I suppose it only does it when it's plugged in, doesn't it? So it's probably not going to drain the battery.
So I've got them unplugged now, just in case I did happen to say something that was a little bit like Hey Siri. Yeah.
But even like the things like the iOS 8 handoff, and what is it, you can take phone calls on the Mac. I've turned all that off because I can see it doing my head in a little bit. I just think, you know, I want the phone to ring. I don't want my computer to ring.
Yeah. Well, I did have a phone call coming. I don't have many phone calls coming in, so it doesn't really bother me most of the time. Right. And then I did have a phone call coming in, and I heard it on the Mac. I thought, what the bloody hell's that? I didn't know what was going on. In fact, because it surprised me so much, I didn't even get to it in time to be able to answer it.
Again, I can see it's like the sort of thing that as I become conditioned to it and begin to maybe trust it a bit more. Because, again, I think, well, you know, it's taken me a good long while just to get used to the whole more of a teleconference idea. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm talking to you now. I've just got the mic and you're coming through on the Mac speakers. You know, I'm not using a headset. I'm not using a handset. And it's taken me quite a while to trust the technology to work properly, because, you know, maybe not a few years ago, but a while ago, you know, you'd get echo and all that kind of stuff going on because the noise cancellation wouldn't work properly, and I'd just give up. So I've got to use a handset, you know, because headsets are, I find that weird when you've got, you know, earphones on and stuff.
Yeah, well, I have put headphones on for this just to make sure that I don't have any feedback going on this.
Yeah, well, hopefully it sounds okay. You're not getting any echo your end.
No, it's fine, actually. It's working fine.
Yeah, I did think, you know, I did quickly try with some headphones on, but always, you know, because I've only got closed back, you know, because sort of sound recorders headphones, so they block out everything. So it sounds like you've got a really bad head cold when you're talking, and it's like, it's really unnatural to try and talk like that, or I find it really unnatural.
Yeah, I wouldn't sort of do it so that you have just one ear covered and the other one open.
Yeah, I just find it too weird. I'm a bit funny like that.
Yeah, I suppose it depends on which. I mean, sometimes you have a good ear and a bad ear anyway. You have to get it the right way around.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I find probably my left ear is more natural than my right ear for talking into. It's quite weird. Oh, my screensaver's coming on. I'm hoping that's not going to cut.
Well, talking about good ears and bad ears, my son has got one bad ear, and it's working out quite well for him because he's got a new baby in there. So I've recently become a granddad. And you say he can sleep with it so that the bad ear's up, so the baby's crying. You don't have to hear the baby crying at night.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah, but you're sort of talking about sort of sound and stuff again, going back to the film. Have you ever tried that application called Pluralize?
I have, yes. I've only ever tried it in trial mode because, it's
quite expensive,
quite expensive,
isn't it?
Yeah. But it seems to work pretty well. I like it. And if I ever get to sort of an opportunity to sort of buy it through a production or something, then I certainly will. But you can actually do, I mean, it's not as, you can't do batch syncing, but Final Cut Pro 10 will actually sync. If you select, and this is quite fiddly as well, if you select a, you know, a sound rush and a video rush and tell it to sync up using the waveform, it will do it, and it will do it pretty accurately as well.
I have done that with the last thing, that multicam thing that kind of did that for me as well.
Yeah, I found it can be quite fiddly, to, depending how you've got your sort of bins arranged in the editor, to sort of select each take. And then another thing I found is it didn't zero out, you know, didn't take the sound out of the video, you know, the guide track, if you like. So you'd have to do that manually. So it would do it, you know, in my experience. But I mean, Pluralize, yeah, if you can afford that, I think that's probably the way to go, really.
Talking about GTD again, you haven't ever been tempted by OmniFocus?
No.
Because that's another one that's expensive as well, isn't it? I do have it. So I managed to get it. There was an offer on it one time, and I got it on the Mac.
Right.
And I found I was liking it so much, I actually got it for the iPad as well.
Cool, yeah.
But they're cheeky buggers as well, because I don't have it, so it's universal for iOS. I mean, if I wanted to use it on the iPhone now, I'd have to get another bloody version of it.
Yeah, that annoys me a little bit, especially when the apps are a little bit more expensive. I mean, if they're a couple of quid, I'm like, wow, you know, it's a couple of quid, isn't it? But they like quite expensive, aren't they, the OmniFocus and that?
Yeah. Back into films again now, so just have a quick question for you. Your two-week film challenge, how did that go?
Yeah, it went well. I mean, like I say, I'm trying to think where we would have been. So there was one called The Original Soundtrack, which had probably been completed when I spoke to you last time.
And there's that one and the one called The Dabbler.
That was done by another filmmaker in San Francisco, and yeah, there was kind of like a mini film festival and such, and they got screened sort of both sides of the Atlantic, if you like. So there was a little bit of buzz around that. It didn't happen again, though. Like I say, the fix was shot using that methodology of, you know, get everyone together, shoot everything in 2 weeks. Didn't get edited within the 2 weeks, but I think the fix got finished. Oh, I think it was 2011. It was in post for a year or two. But we had, like, you know, a professional guy doing the music and stuff, you know, so it sort of brought the production value up a little bit.
Is it an advantage sometimes to leave things in post for a while and let things sort of simmer for a bit? And I find this with my writing, where I do some writing, leave it for a week or two, and then go back to it again and have a different view on it, and I can find things I want to add to it, things I've missed, and basically get a better handle on it by going back to it after a week or two.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, I think you've either got to do it kind of there and then, and just, you know, it's done, it's finished, and that's kind of how I approach the YouTube videos, because they're kind of almost disposable, and it's like, well, who really cares if it's not quite edited brilliantly, if you like. Whereas if it's like, you know, an hour long, you know, you want to make sure it's the best it can be. And yeah, that did kind of drag out. And yeah, you're right, I think I should have put it on the shelf for a bit, or had someone else edit it. That would have been another approach, I guess.
I suppose with movies and stuff like that, it might be a bit more difficult, in as much as, you know, you could perhaps find it more difficult to get into a particular situation and get the lighting right again for whatever you did before. And it's probably a bit more difficult in those terms, rather than to sort of find some more words, you know, where, you know, writing's concerned.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I tend to avoid what are called pickups, which is, like you say, you go back and recreate something because you didn't get it right first time, or you missed a shot, or whatever the problem might be. So I try and just find creative ways to edit around those kind of problems. Beginning of this month, I shot, well, I didn't shoot it, I produced, sort of funded and produced a short film, which, I mean, that's gone out to, that's with the sound designer at the moment. But the approach there was, I was going to be very much hands off, and kind of pull people in to kind of make it. And we had some issues there where they were using a DSLR, and we lost the whole night's, we were shooting overnight as well, and we lost the whole night's rushes because of a corrupt CF card, which wasn't a lot of fun. I guess the point I'm trying to make there is I am letting that one sit on the shelf for a bit because I'm the one who's got to edit it because, you know, I can't afford to sort of pay a professional editor, blah, blah, blah. So that, yeah, I've done kind of what I would term a promotional cut of it because one thing I'm thinking of is, well, this could be promotional material for a, sort of a Kickstarter campaign for what I envisage as kind of a new franchise for this character called Sexton Lovecraft, who's kind of a paranormal investigator, which is sort of a mashup between Sexton Blake and H.P. Lovecraft kind of mythology. But we'll see where that takes me. So, yeah, I see what you're saying about, you know, kind of letting things simmer a little and really just trying to step back. And the way I do that is I have to just almost forget it. You know, it's just like put it on the shelf, forget it for a few weeks and then look at it with fresh eyes.
Yeah. So what else do you do creatively? Do you do a lot of photography? Do you use any particularly good apps for that sort of thing on your iPhone and your Mac?
Yeah, I'm not much of a photographer. I mean, I will say, like, PhotoStream is another one of those things which I think that's obviously been introduced in the 5 years since we last spoke, and I think that's really good. I love having, you know, you can take a photo on my iPhone and it just appears on my Mac. You know, that's brilliant. I'm waiting to see what they do because they're going to merge Aperture and iPhoto, so that could be interesting because I sort of use both at the moment. So I'll be pleased for that to be consolidated into a single app. But in terms of, yeah, I'm not really much of a photographer, so I don't really use a lot of stuff beyond the sort of inbuilt stuff you can do. You know, you can do quite a few tweaks now just in the Photos app, can't you?
Yeah, I'm a fan of the Aperture application. It's interesting to see where that's going to go, especially seeing as on their last update of Yosemite, they did actually do an update to Aperture as well, which is a surprise. They were supposed to be not working on that anymore. And when it comes down to this new Photos app that's going to be coming out, I mean, there's going to be a lot of professionals that are already saying that the sky is falling and they're saying, oh, I'm going to go to Lightroom or... And they don't think that Apple are going to be able to come up with an application, well, Photos application that's going to be suitable for the semi-professionals or professionals. And I can't see that somehow because I think, yeah, I mean, if they're going to say that they're going to have something that's going to be the a replacement for Aperture, it's going to have to be as good, isn't it? Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah, and I guess they'd just fold in the advanced options with the sort of what you might call the consumer level options, you know, and maybe they'll hide it or maybe they won't. But, you know, I guess from Apple's point of view, it makes no sense to be maintaining two programs that are very, very similar.
That is true.
You know, and I'm sure Adobe will do a lot of business out of it, much like they did with when Apple came out with Final Cut Pro 10. I mean, loads of people switched to Premiere because they were just like, oh, Final Cut's too much like iMovie, blah, blah, blah. It's like, but great. It's like, because for me, that makes the, consumerization, commoditization of these apps. To me, it's quite amazing, you know, that you've got all this power as a sort of a consumer, if you like. And some professionals see that as a threat. But, you know, I still think it's all just tools and you still need a good eye. You still need, you know, if you're talking about photography, you need to know how to set your lights up and stuff like that, don't you? So,
well, then, I mean, I look at it upon it in terms of, I mean, just because it's powerful, I mean, is there a reason why it shouldn't be easy as well?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely, yeah. In fact, you know, in the 21st century, I almost demand things to be easy. I mean, I'm hark back to the DOS days, which, you know, for the time, I suppose DOS was easy for the time, but it was still complicated to, you know, a normal person would look at a DOS command and wouldn't understand, you know. So I think it's absolutely essential that things get easier to use. I mean, you know, but a lot of people are threatened by that, you know, the support industries and stuff, you know, see their sort of lifeblood disappearing because, you know, if programs never go wrong, what are they going to do, you know?
It's, yeah, like, it's kind of a bit like that with the old DSLR versus the mirrorless cameras to a certain extent. I mean, these mirrorless cameras, I mean, they're smaller, they're lighter, they're easy to carry, they have the same sensors in there, same quality lenses. Why not use those instead of using a really great big heavy DSLR sort of to carry around, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and again, I don't really know the details with the camera side, but yeah, I agree that it's, Well, I mean, use what you want to use. I mean, it's like when I've had sort of mild arguments with people about what editing application they use. I mean, whoever's watching the film isn't going to give a damn whether it was edited in Avid or Final Cut. I mean, it just doesn't matter at that level, does it? Once it's a product, people don't really care how it's made unless they're that interested that they want to dig sort of behind how it was made. But
as long as it tells the story well.
Exactly, yeah.
So one more quick tangent before we go, because we're talking for nearly an hour now. You say you got some kids there. Are they into using technology? How old are they?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I have burned, over the last few years, I've burned through a few iPads, but I would go through phases of really, I think what I liked about the iPads was the battery would last forever and the bigger screen. I'm quite a casual gamer, so I'd play games on there. But invariably, they'd end up not getting used. So I give them to my kids. And so they're avid iPad users. They've both got an iPhone, and I've got a boy and a girl. The girl's 13, the boy is 16, and they're very typical. So the girl is always on the phone, always communicating, FaceTime, texting, blah, blah, blah. And my boy basically uses the iPad more for sort of casual gaming. He's got an Xbox, which he uses for more hardcore gaming, I suppose, the Call of Duties and all that kind of stuff. But they don't have a PC. My daughter did have an Asus laptop for a while, but even she calls that a piece of junk now. It's quite interesting that they both gravitated to iPads.
Yeah.
And again, part of that, I think, is that they're very reliable, that they perform well, and to me, they act like appliances. You know, yeah. It's this whole thing of appliance computing where, you know, it does what you want it to do, and you can figure it out without too much hassle, you know.
You can do pretty much all you need to do with an iPad. I find that there are one or two things. There are a couple of websites where I was trying to do something, fill in a form or something like that. It wouldn't let me do it on the iPad. And I got to the same website on the Mac and I was able to do it.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's getting less frequent, though, that kind of disparity.
Yeah, you get to, I mean, there are still sort of one or two web programmers out there that still like to have these flash-heavy websites that drive everyone nuts because they take so long to load. And they're horrendous. I hate them.
Yeah, no, I'm not a fan of Flash either. No, and again, it's one thing that drives me. I know there's Facebook apps, but Facebook I think is underpinned by Flash for the videos and stuff. And depending how you're accessing it, it will say you need Flash, blah blah blah. And that drives me nuts as well.
Well, do you know what? We've had a marvellous chat this morning. It's been brilliant. We're up to an hour now. So I think the thing to do now is to say, how can people get in touch with you if they want to find out more about you and look at your movies?
Well, I'm currently bootstrapping Deer Studios. So keep an eye on deerstudios.co.uk and I will no doubt be posting up kind of my links to my videos there. So you can see sort of my past repertoire and updates on what I'm currently working on.
Yeah, I suppose you'd be working on a show reel as well, won't you?
Well, yes and no. I think show reels are interesting because when you're kind of producing stuff, they're slightly less important almost because, you know, I'm going out with a view to employ people rather than, you know, touting for work, although as a sound recordist, that's one area where I will be touting for work. But yeah, I'm not, like I say, I'm not really a cameraman. I'm visually, you know, it's not my discipline. But yeah, I mean, you're right. I guess in terms of gaining a commission, people want to see what sort of output that Deer Studios is capable of. Yeah.
I think the thing with you saying about it not being your discipline is that with the fact that the technology we have now is so capable in all sorts of directions, you kind of feel like you have to sort of be jumping in and doing everything.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting, isn't it, that the technology has become... I mean, the analogy I always use is, you know, pretty much everyone has access to a pencil or a pen and a piece of paper, but not everyone is a world-class author. So that's kind of the analogy I use. It's like, well, yeah, the technology's there, but you still need skill, you still need talent, and certainly in filmmaking you need a lot of collaboration, you need a lot of things to come together just right to kind of have that that sort of world-class product at the end.
Okay, on that note, I'd like to say thank you very much for having a chat on Mac to Mac Questions.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks.